Education is fundamentally an initiation into a culture. And actually, many church documents have affirmed that point. A key missing ingredient in Catholic education is not being attentive enough to the need to be initiating our kids into this living, organic Catholic tradition.
Welcome to Faith and Culture, a production of the Augustine Institute. Every week, we explore the glory of the Catholic faith and the beauty of Catholic culture. And now, here's the host of Faith and Culture, Joseph Pierce.
Hello, I'm Joseph Pierce, and welcome to another Faith and Culture podcast with the Augustine Institute. And my guest today is Jared Stout, one of my colleagues here at the Augustine Institute. He teaches theology for the Augustine Institute. He also works for the Archdiocese of Denver and does many other things, writes for many different journals. I like to refer to him as the fully integrated man because he's the beneficiary of the Catholic Studies program at the University of St. Thomas in Minnesota, founded by the late, great Don Brill. And consequently, you know, at the master's level, he studied Catholic Studies, which meant it was a mixture of theology, philosophy, history, literature. So he's a well-rounded man. And we're going to sort of touch upon many of those things today, because I'd like to discuss today faith and culture, and maybe in relation to education, and perhaps the legacy and the lessons to be learned by maybe from Hilaire Belloc and perhaps even more Christopher Dawson. And speaking of Hilaire Belloc, I know that you and I had a discussion, and I sort of took issue fairly recently in an article about Belloc's famous saying that the Europe is the faith and the faith is Europe, and saying I basically disagreeing with that, saying that the faith made Europe, but the faith is much bigger than Europe. And I know that you have, you know, should we say, it raised your eyebrows, and you begged to differ at least up to a point. Yes. So maybe we'll start there. I mean, what is the faith? What is Europe's role in the faith? What's the relationship between faith and culture? Is there a providential connection between Europe and the faith? Was Belloc right? Am I wrong? etc. So over to you, Jared Stout.
Yes, and I do agree that Belloc may have gone too far, because you are right that the faith is much bigger than Europe. And, you know, I teach church history here at the Augustine Institute and also for the lay division of St. John Vianney Seminary here in Denver. And what you see is that, you know, the faith has been able to enculturate itself throughout the entire world. And you look, for instance, at the Jesuit reductions in Latin America, a very great enculturation of the faith with some of the native populations there, especially the Guarani Indians. You look at Ethiopia, you know, you look at some of the Christian communities in India. And yet, you know, Pope Benedict in his Regensburg lecture said that there was something to that Macedonian calling out in the night to Paul. You know, Paul, please come over here, right? You know, just calling out for Paul to leave the mission that he thought he had simply in Asia Minor. And he said the Holy Spirit was preventing him from going farther into Asia Minor. And so he actually set sail from Troas, which is the city of Troy, which was very interesting, right? Because, you know, the Greeks had sailed over into Asia Minor and sacked Troy. But now Paul was going from Troy back into Greece.
Right.
And so he goes to Macedonia.
So he's,
you know,
the Trojan's revenge.
That's right, yeah. Well, it's this Asiatic faith,
right
now coming over to mainland Europe in Greece. And, you know, you see his Athens speech at the Areopagus, you know, where he's even referencing, you know, Greek philosophers and the Greek poet Pindar. And so Pope Benedict pointed to this providential meeting of faith and reason that happened in Europe, where the Christian faith, very early on, right, already in the ministry of Paul, meets European civilization. And he said that it's providential, and he said the church can never abandon that initial enculturation,
right,
even as it's enculturated in other places throughout the world. So let's say, and please God this never happens, that the faith were to become extinct in Europe. Well, I would argue that that connection of the faith in Europe would continue to live even in other countries, right? Yeah. That providential meeting of faith and reason that happened in Europe.
And if we understand the essence of Europe, it's being as being synonymous with Christendom, which I think is what Belloc was saying,
right,
then that essence, that isness, right, and isness never becomes a wasness, right? So that Europe always is Christendom in the full understanding of what Europe is.
Right.
And if Christianity were to die in Europe, heaven forbid, then Europe would have died. And what you'll have is a geographical space that once was Europe. So if you're going to use that definition of Europe, which is what Belloc was doing, which is fair enough. But I agree with you completely. Of course, there's something providential, if you like, between the fact that Jerusalem unites, if you like, in a nuptial embrace with Athens.
Right.
And then through the political power of Rome. Spreads throughout the empire. So you have this, first of all, in Athens and Jerusalem, you have faith and reason, right? Theology and philosophy meeting. Mm-hmm. But you also have, if you like, through the Roman Empire, this secular institution being baptized by the spread of Christianity. And of course, God knows, right, in his providence, when the incarnation happens, what's going to be happening in the world when the incarnation happens, and this is all part of the design.
Yeah, absolutely.
So of course it's providential. So let's move on. We've discussed Belloc briefly, and what is the essence of Europe and Christendom. But Christopher Dawson is someone I've not studied enough. He's one of my sins of omission. I wrote about him briefly in my book Literary Converts, because he's a convert to the faith.
Indeed.
But I've read very little of his work. You know, as my wife sometimes says, you know, when someone says, have you read a certain book? You know, read it, I own it. Which means I've got plenty of Christopher Dawson on my shelves, but most of it's neglected. So for my benefit, as much as for the benefit of anybody listening, could you tell us something about Christopher Dawson?
Yes.
And what he has to teach us today?
Yeah, so he converted to the Catholic faith at Oxford. So he's, you know, in a long line of converts from Oxford, beginning with Newman. And he was an historian, and he set out on a very ambitious project to basically write an entire history of Western civilization with the lens of looking at how religion is the very center of culture. And I should say, he didn't confine himself simply to Western civilization. That was his specialty, but he did also talk about Asian culture in particular as well, and even the intersection between Asian culture and Christendom. So he starts with the Stone Age. His first major work is called The Age of the Gods, and he was writing that in the 1930s, so it's pretty early on, but he's already looking at what we know about, you know, the prehistorical times to the emergence of civilization in the Mediterranean, and what was the role of religion in the emergence of these societies. And he even looks, you know, in the prehistory to say religion was already there, and, you know, we can say archaeologically, you know, religion was already there at the center. But he is probably best known for writing two major works on the rise of medieval Christendom, the rise of Europe as we know it, The Making of Europe, also from the 1930s, but then also his first set of Gifford lectures, Religion and the Rise of Western Culture. And so in those works, he says, and this goes back to our conversation about Belloc, that Europe is the meeting of the Christian faith, Greek thought, Roman law and order, and the new barbarian peoples who came in to Europe. And I think that's helpful for understanding not just Europe, but even what makes a Christian culture, right? The different components of it, even as we're looking at maybe new enculturations throughout the world,
right,
you know, building
right,
on that.
Right. Well, I mean, one thing about Newman that I find intriguing, that sort of informs these very important works of history that he's written, is he talks about sort of the connection in history and in culture between cult and culture.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, you know, between the religion of a culture and the culture itself, and how that informs history
mm-hmm.
and peoples. Would you like to say something maybe about the aspect of Dawson's work? What makes Dawson different from other historians? He obviously approaches
right.
the issue of history, what history is, in a very different, a radically different way from most secular
right.
historians. So what makes him different? What is it
yeah.
about him?
You know, some people have, you know, accused Dawson of just being too theoretical, right? You know, he has this thesis about religion, you know, being the heart of culture. But he was very attentive, as I've already mentioned, to archaeology, to the great books, and to philosophy. But also, he was very attentive to sociology, you know, as an emerging discipline in the human sciences. So I would say the fact that he brings all of them together and takes them all seriously and doesn't reduce, you know, history simply to economics or to politics, but he really wants to get the big picture of what makes the culture work.
Right.
And he says that religion is the guiding element because it tells the culture what's most important.
Right, right.
And so he wrote a number of books around the time of World War II, sort of looking at the rise of nihilism. And he was saying that, you know, we live in the first secular culture. And he said that the religious dimension, well, two things. One is when it's thwarted, it turns to diabolical expressions, you know, like he saw during the Second World War,
right.
You know, like violence. But he also said that we tend to have our own new religions.
Right.
And so communism and Nazism, for instance, being religious movements.
Right.
And he makes a compelling case for why that is, because they give the sort of the big picture.
Right.
And they're not simply empirical, no matter what they claim, right? You know, they have these big ideas, which are not simply, you know, based upon fact, but, you know, are posited in a religious kind of fashion.
Yeah. They're quasi-religious because they claim to have the answer to the meaning of life, right?
That's right.
If you're a Nazi, that ideology encompasses all you need to know.
Right.
And if you're a communist, the same thing. I mean, again, I think that one thing that Dawson gets and Belloc gets that many secular historians don't get is that history is not just about chronology. It's not just about when things happen. It's not even about mechanics, right? It's not even about how things happen. It's about ultimately why things happen,
mm-hmm.
you know, and why things happen is what actually the mechanics and the chronology are follow on from the why. In other words, the motive. So if our motives change, if our motives are based upon selfishness and pride and ego, hatred, ideology, you know, history is going to be very different
mm-hmm.
than one based upon the love of neighbor, the love of enemy, the love of God. So this understanding that, if you like, the prevailing philosophy or theology of a culture is what is determining its history is something which I think that Dawson gets, that Belloc gets, mm-hmm. and which most historians, particularly a Marxist historian, is all about mechanics, right?
Yeah, they've reduced history to these material forces.
Yes.
You know, and I wanted to talk about Dawson's view of education. You know, you mentioned that mm-hmm. I studied at the University of St. Thomas in the Catholic Studies program. Well, St. Thomas actually has the Dawson collection, you know, of all his personal papers. And so when I was an undergraduate, I got a research grant to work with the Dawson Collection under the direction of Dr. Don Breel,
mm-hmm.
who founded the Catholic Studies program. And Catholic Studies was really founded on Dawson's educational vision. And in my research in the collection, that is what actually impacted me the most from Dawson's thought. And so, you know, Newman and Dawson both sort of provided the intellectual pillars of the Catholic Studies program. And one of the key things that Dawson said was that education is fundamentally an initiation into a culture, no matter, you know, where you're at, right? I mean, that's the function that education provides for youth. And actually, many church documents have affirmed that point.
Right.
And so he said that a key missing ingredient in Catholic education is not being attentive enough to the need to be initiating our kids into this living, organic Catholic tradition. You know, the tradition that built Europe, as we were just saying, and that now is being undermined in our secular culture. Well, then what's the best way to fight against secularism? Is to emphasize Catholic education's role in initiating into and rebuilding Christian culture.
Right. Yeah, wonderful.
The book, you know, in which he says that is called The Crisis of Western Education. So it's the book I usually recommend most from Dawson.
Right. Well, I'm really pleased that you did instill into our discussion of Belloc and Dawson and history, Dawson's vision of education. I mean, one of the things I'm doing now is the Cardinal Newman Society is editing the journal
mm-hmm.
of the Cardinal Newman Society. So the reinvigoration, the revitalization of Catholic education is crucial. And absolutely, we need to be restoring the role and the importance of Christopher Dawson to our understanding of what authentic Catholic education is. So Jared Stout's been my guest today, a theologian, my colleague here at the Augustine Institute, also working with the Archdiocese of Denver and writing for multifarious different publications, the too long to list in the time we have left. But I do hope, Jared, that you will join me again on a Faith and Culture podcast.
It would be my pleasure, yeah.
Well, thanks so much again for listening to this Faith and Culture podcast of the Augustine Institute. My name is Joseph Pierce. I've been your host. Thanks for listening. Goodbye and God bless.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Faith and Culture with Joseph Pierce. Faith and Culture is a production of the Augustine Institute. For more information, please visit us at faithandculture.com.